ॐ सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः. Welcome back. We're continuing our study of chapter 18, the final chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. We'll begin with our recitation, beginning with verse 33. Yes. Repeat after me, please. Dhrityayaya dharayate, dhrityayaya dha, mana pranendriya kriyaha, mana pranendriya. Yogenavyavicharanya, dhritasaparthasattvaki, yayatu dharmakam hartan, dhritya dharayate arjuna, prasanghena phala kanchi, dhritasaparta rajasi, yaya swapnam bhayam shokam, visharam maram, navimunchati dur medha, dhritasaparta tamasi, Sukham tvidanim trividam, shunume bharata, abhyasadhramate yatra, duhkantam chani gachati, yathadagrevisham iva, Parimane mṛtopamam, tat sukham sattvikam proktam, atma buddhi prasarajam, viṣayendriya sam yogād, yathadagre mṛtopamam, Pariname vishamiva, tat sukham rajasam smritam, tadagrecha nubandhecha, sukham mohanam atmanah, nidralasya pramarotham, Tathama samudahritam, Natarasti prithivyam, Devideveshu vapunaha, Sattvam prakriti jar muktam, Yadebisya tribhirgunaihi, Brahmanakshatriya visham, Shudranam chaparantapa, Karmani pravibhaktani, Swabhava prabhavargunaihi, Shamodamastapa shaucham, Kshantirajavam eva cha, Jnanam vijnanam astikyam, Brahmakarma swabhavajam.
Very good. Let's see, we begin today with 36. Yes. So in our last class, we're continuing, we'll be concluding today this threefold analysis, sattva, rajas, tamas,
this analysis of so many different aspects of human behavior and human thought in terms of the three gunas, sattva, rajas, tamas. This analysis that began in chapter 17 and continues here into chapter 18, we'll be concluding it shortly. We have just one more topic left. In our last class, the topic was threefold dhriti and buddhi. Threefold buddhi, understanding, sattvika, rajasa, tamasa, and threefold dhriti, courage, commitment, intent. Other meanings are there as well. So we finished that topic in the last class, and we come to the final topic, which is treated in this threefold manner, sattva, rajas, tamas. That final topic is sukham, happiness. Kind of the central goal of life. You can't find anyone who says, I don't want happiness. Everyone wants happiness. So here we get Sri Krishna's analysis of sukha, of happiness, in terms of what is sattvika sukha, what was rajasa sukha, and what is tamasa sukha. Remember our basic definitions. Tamasa is the principle of darkness and ignorance and lethargy. And in terms of human behavior, it's that which makes you sick, that which impairs you. And we'll get we'll discuss this again at the end of the topic, but just to introduce us, that which creates any impediment to your living a productive life. Productive life is a life in which you pursue the purusharthas, dharma, artha, kama, moksha. Anything that impedes you in the pursuit of life's four goals, that is tamasa. Rajasa is a principle of activity, of passion, of desire, and that represents that which binds you to purely worldly pursuits. By binding you to worldly pursuits, it prevents you from a spiritual pursuit. As long as you're focused on trying to find all your contentment and peace and happiness through worldly pursuits, driven by rajas, that will prevent you from a deeper spiritual pursuit. And in the absence of tamas and rajas, what remains is sattva. Sattva is a principle of purity. And in the absence of tamas and rajas, you are then free to pursue the spiritual goal of life, the ultimate goal being moksha. Enough of an introduction. Now that threefold analysis is applied to sukha, so then it means that there should be a tamasa sukha, a kind of sukha that actually impairs you and prevents you from going up in life. There should be a rajasa sukha, a sukha that prevents you from spiritual growth, be it by attaching you to worldly things alone. And there should be a sattvika sukha, a sukha consistent with spiritual growth. And that's what Sri Krishna is going to explain in the next series of verses. So we start with 36. Sukham twidanim trividam, sukham twidanim. Shunu me bharatar shabha, shunu me bharatar. Abhyasad ramate yatra, abhyasad ramate. Dukantam chani gachati, dukantam chani gachati. Idanim, now. Tu, on the other, the two words are connected. Tu, idanim. You have to break those two words apart. Tu, on the other hand, idanim, now. He says, Bharatarshaba, O Arjuna, O best of this land, Shrinu, listen, may, listen to me. Listen to me as I describe what? Trividham sukham, threefold sukha. Trividha, threefold sukham. And threefold, of course, sattvika, rajasa, and tamasa. Shrinu, may, listen to me, Arjuna, as I describe this threefold sukha. Yatra, By following this threefold sukha, ramate, one rejoices, one delights, abhyasat, through the practice, through the exercise of any one of these, through the pursuit. Through the pursuit of these three kinds of sukha, one ramate, one revels, and dukantam cha nigacchati, also cha nigacchati, one arrives at dukantam. This word dukantam has two opposite meanings. The Sanskrit can do that. So dukantam can either mean that which ends in dukkha. Anta means end. So one meaning is that whose anta is dukkha, that which ends in dukkha, a kind of sukha that ends in dukkha is actually going to be described in the very next verse. It starts out as sukha in two verses. In two verses, Sri Krishna is going to describe a kind of sukha that starts with sukha but ends with dukkha. But it turns out that's not what Sri Krishna means here, which means the translation on the board is incorrect. We have to use the other meaning. One meaning is that which ends in dukkha, and the other meaning is the end of dukkha. Dukantam has both meanings. And we have to use the second meaning, which means this meaning, ends in suffering, is incorrect. The correct meaning is that which leads to the end of suffering. Dukantam nigacchati, a kind of sukha, this threefold sukha, leads to the end of suffering. Dukantam cha nigacchati. So, with this one verse introduction, the next three verses are obviously going to tell us about that trividha sukha, the three kinds of sukha. The next verse will be sattvika sukha, followed by the next verse rajasa, and finally tamasa sukha in the next three verses. We'll proceed. This verse is introducing sattvika sukha. Yattaragre vishamiva, yattaragre vishamiva. Pariname mrutopamam, pariname mrutop, tatsukam satvikam proktam, tatsukam satvikam. Atma buddhi prasarajam, atma buddhi prasar. Tatsukam satvikam proktam, tatsukam. That sukha, described in his verse, proktam, is said, is called what? Sattvikam. So the sukha described by this verse is sattvika sukha. You'll find Sri Krishna's definition here is something very surprising. He says, it is yat tat, that sukha, which agre, at the beginning, an experience which agre, at the beginning, is visham eva. Visha means poison. That experience, which is like poison at first, agre, but pariname, with time, there's a transformation. Parinama means transformation. Pariname, that when that initial experience undergoes a transformation, we have to talk about that transformation, then what? That initial experience, which was like poison, amrita upamam, it becomes like nectar. It was like poison at first, and then it becomes like nectar. Tatsukam sattvikam proktam, that kind of sukha is called sattvika, and it is atma buddhi prasarajam. It is prasarajam, born of the tranquility of atma buddhi. Atma here simply means one's own. Atma buddhi, one's own mind. Born of the tranquility of one's own mind. Now, this looks very intriguing. How can an experience be like poison at first, but lead to something which is like nectar? We've noticed in life that there are some things which are very difficult and unpleasant at first, but if you pursue them, it becomes wonderful. Let me give you some examples. How about exercise? If you're out of shape, when you start exercising, you feel like you're going to die. It is so painful and difficult. But if you persist, then you start to feel healthy and vital and filled with life. It becomes something very invigorating. So that's a good example. Agre, at the beginning, Visham Eva, it's like poison, Pariname, but in time, with some transformation, Amrita, Upamam, it becomes like nectar. Here's a favorite example. Did any of you learn properly music, especially classical music of any kind? You know, when you start to learn any kind of music very seriously or an instrument, which is difficult, instruments can be very difficult to play. The first time you learn, if you're trying to learn the vina, you can imagine your first notes, twang, oing, oing, you know, all of this. Or if you've heard someone try to play a trumpet or some kind of wind instrument that requires you to buzz your lips, you can't even make a sound at first when you put that trumpet to your lips. Or a flute. So when you pick up a musical instrument for the first time, what comes out? Or if you're singing, I hope we don't have to hear you sing for the first time. If you've been singing a while and you're practiced, we'd love to hear you. But but if you're just learning to sing, maybe you can do that someplace far away so we don't have to hear. Because when you begin learning to play a musical instrument or to sing, it's difficult. And it's even more difficult if you're learning a classical form of music. It is very challenging. And if some of you learned, and you remember, you know, little kids, and some of your kids are also learning, and children are notorious for complaining, oh, mom, do I have to? You know, you have to play, you have to practice your music. Oh, mom, do I have to? And if you were practicing as a little kid, you felt the same way. But then if we're lucky, mom insists, yes, you have to. And we persist, and once you master that skill, and as your skill increases and increases, it becomes something of great joy, not just for you, but for so many others. Think of how you go from those first notes on that vina, twang, twang, and then you end up being a masterful performer, performing such wonderful music that everyone just is delighted. This is a really good example. You already know this, many things worth pursuing in life require going through some significant difficulty early on. Many of you in college, for example, you were training for a profession. That college study for most people is not easy or pleasant. It's hard work. And it's not always pleasant, so you suffer and you got all these examinations and all of these papers and projects are done. It's not fun. It's unpleasant. But look at the consequence. So, agre vishamiva, that which is difficult at first, but pariname, in time with transformation, it becomes something wonderful. But now, we're studying the Bhagavad Gita, so I don't think Lord Krishna is talking about being persistent in your studies for your profession or being persistent in learning a musical instrument. Here's what Shankara has to say, the commentator on our Bhagavad Gita. He says, jnana, vairagya, dhyana, samadhi, arambhe. He says, when you undertake at the beginning, when you begin to pursue knowledge, when you begin to pursue vairagya, dispassion, when you begin to turn your attention away from worldly pursuits and towards spiritual pursuits, and great example, dhyana and samadhi, when you begin your practice of meditation, agre, at the beginning of your practice of meditation, atyanta ayasa purvakatvat vishamiva, he says, it requires so much effort at first, it is like poison. And he applies that nicely to meditation, and which is a great example. I've told this told this anecdote before. When I was young and just trying to learn meditation for the first time, I decided that a good length of time for meditation was 45 minutes. I should meditate for 45 minutes. So I sat down to meditate and meditate and meditate and meditate. I looked at the clock, 20 minutes are done. Okay. I go back, I meditate and meditate and meditate and meditate. I better look at the clock. 25 minutes are done. I go back and meditate and meditate and meditate and meditate and meditate. I look at the clock. 26 minutes are done. And that's not uncommon for someone beginning their practice of meditation. I mean, to even for some people, to sit cross-legged is very... By the way, there's no rule. You can sit in a chair and meditate just fine. There's absolutely no rule. Somebody says, "But Swamiji, we've never seen pictures of ancient sages sitting in chairs meditate." They didn't have chairs like that. No one sat in chairs. That was a floor-sitting culture, right? Okay, you're nothing wrong. But you deal with problems with your back and your bottom side and all of this. It can be really uncomfortable. And you're sitting there and it feels like such an agonizingly long time. That's exactly what Shankara's observation is here. With regard to spiritual practice, when we first begin those spiritual practices, Shankara says, atyanta ayasa purvakatvat. It feels like it requires so much effort, so much difficulty, and even pain. I gave the example of exercise before. Physical pain is required at first. So Shankara says, therefore, visham eva tadagre. At the beginning, it feels like poison at first. But if you persist, and look at what happens. With regard to the exercise, you persist, you become healthy, you become vital, filled with energy, and you can't wait to begin your exercise because you're so enthusiastic about it. With music, you struggled and suffered for a long time, for years, to master that musical form or instrument, and after years pass, it becomes a source of such joy for you and others. You look forward to it. Then think, how much greater is it in terms of spiritual practice? These are worldly activities. So if a worldly activity like exercise or music can come up to such a high level and grant you so much joy and contentment, then think about spiritual practice. The study of the Bhagavad Gita, living a life of karma yoga, being more regular with prayer and meditation. Early on, it can be tedious and difficult. Shankara says, atyanta ayas. Here's an interesting observation. The one who says it requires a tremendous effort, the one who says it is a spiritual genius, Shankara. If an ordinary person says it takes a lot of effort, we would expect that. But here we have an extraordinary teacher saying it's a lot of effort. What does that mean? It really is a lot of effort. If in Shankara's view, it's a lot of effort, that really means something. It's like if you or I say that mathematics is difficult. Well, we would expect you and I would say that. But if someone like Einstein says mathematics is difficult, then you really have to take that seriously. So here, Shankaracharya himself is saying at the beginning, spiritual practice involves difficulty. So we have to take that very seriously and acknowledge the truth of that statement. But you persist in worldly activities like exercise and music, how great the American expression, the payoff. What an expression. The payoff is great. Well, if you make that effort and persist in spiritual pursuits, the payoff, if we can use that word, is going to be vastly greater. And that's why Sri Krishna concludes here, Atma Buddhi Prasada Jam. This sukha, sattvika sukha, is Atma Buddhi Prasada Jam. Buddhi Prasada Jam. That which is born of the tranquility of your own mind. So he is saying, Sri Krishna is saying, that sattvika sukha leads to a condition of tranquility of your mind. There's perhaps in life nothing more important than tranquility of mind. How do you feel when you're in the presence of people who are angry and upset and nasty and mean and frustrated and all of that? If you're surrounded by people, no one enjoys that, right? Well, how is it when your mind is full of frustration and anger and irritation? You know, if you're dealing with frustrated, irritating people, at least you can go away from those people sometimes. But if that frustration and irritation is in your mind, you're stuck. What will you do? Sattvika sukha is that which leads to tranquility of mind. Not all kinds of sukha do so. But notice the sukha you get from exercise leads to tranquility of mind. The sukha you get from music leads to tranquility of mind. And in our current context, the sukha you get from spiritual pursuits, spiritual practice, any kind of sadhana. What kind of sadhana? Suppose you like to do prayer or chanting. Suppose you like to do puja or reciting some stotras. Suppose you like to study the Bhagavad Gita. Suppose you like to meditate. We were joking in a meditation session. We were joking that everyone's favorite activity to do at home, the most favorite thing for everyone, of course, is meditation. We said kind of tongue in cheek. But you'll agree that for all of these spiritual practices, even though they may be difficult at first, they are difficult. That's what Shankara is telling us. They are difficult at first. But if you persist, the consequence is not just sukha, is not just happiness, but it is a happiness which is Atma Buddhi Prasadajam, a happiness which is born of your own mind. The consequence of that is really going to be clear when we look at Rajasa Sukha and Tamasa Sukha. Notice this. Most kinds of Sukha are dependent on external things and situations. For example, the example we've used here several times. Suppose you like ice cream. And you eat the ice cream and you become happy. Which means you eat the ice cream, you get Sukha. You don't eat the ice cream, you don't get Sukha. That particular sukha is dependent on the ice cream. When the ice cream is available, sukha. When the ice cream is not available, no sukha. Well, wouldn't you agree that the vast majority of enjoyment in life is like the ice cream? When some pleasant thing or pleasurable situation is present, you experience sukha. And when it's absent, there's no sukha, or possibly even dukkha. We'll talk about that more later. But notice this sukha is Atma Buddhi Prasadajam. It's born of the tranquility of your own mind. You don't need the ice cream for this sukha. You don't need any external situation for this sukha. This sukha comes from a tranquil mind. And this is very Vedantic. Notice a tranquil mind. Tranquil means absence of activity. Tranquil means silent. So how can silence, this is important Vedanta, silence is the absence of something, right? Tranquility is the absence of disturbance. A silent mind is a mind in which there's the absence of activity. How can the absence of something create sukha? There looks like a logical problem here. Here's the logic. You'll notice that there is no elephant in my hand, right? There is the absence of an elephant in my hand. Because there's no elephant in my hand, therefore, today is Saturday. How do you like my logic? How ridiculous. How can the absence of anything be the cause of anything? You follow? How can the absence of anything be the cause? An absence cannot be the cause. But yet, Atma Buddhi Prasadajam, Sri Krishna says that this sukha, this happiness, comes from a quiet mind, a tranquil mind, a mind in which there's the absence of disturbance, a mind in which there's the absence of activity. How do we explain this? Because the true source of sukha is not the mind. The true source of sukha is your true nature, Atma, the consciousness by which the mind is known, the consciousness by which your thoughts and feelings and perceptions are known. That consciousness, that Atma, Satchit Ananda, that Ananda, Swatmananda, one's own Ananda, is manifest when the mind is quiet. A mind filled with activity, a mind filled with agitation and frustration and sadness and hurt and anger, that mind obstructs the manifestation of the Ananda, which is your true nature. But a mind that is tranquil, buddhi prasadajam, in that mind, which is prasada, in the tranquility of that mind, the fullness and completeness, which is your true nature, shines through. In our meditation class, we gave the metaphor of the mind being like a window. If the window is really dirty, light can't get through. If your mind is filled with anger and frustration, that Ananda can't come through the mind. But when that window is clean, light penetrates effortlessly. When your mind is tranquil, that natural Ananda becomes manifest. That natural Ananda, manifest in a tranquil mind, is called Sattvika Sukha, that pure form of Sukha, and it is born from things, activities which are difficult at first, Vishamiva, Tadagre, at the beginning it's difficult, but in the end, Amrita Upamam, it becomes like nectar, and that's activities like spiritual practice in particular. So if this is Sattvika Sukha, what is Rajasa Sukha? Let's see that in the next verse. Vishayendriya Samyogad, Vishayendriya Sam Yattaragre Mrutopamam, Yattaragre Mrutopamam, Parināme Vishamiva, Parināme Tatsukam Raja Samsmritam, Tatsukam Raja. Tatsukam, that happiness, Smritam, is remembered, is understood, it's considered to be Rajasa. So the Rajasa of the principle of passion and desire and activity. So now we get Sri Krishna's explanation of Rajasa Sukha. And he says, it is Vishaya Indriya Samyogat. This Rajasa Sukha takes place due to the Samyoga, the connection of your Indriyas, your sense organs, the connection of your sense organs with what? Vishaya, with objects. Due to the connection of your sense organs with various objects, Rajasa Sukha arises. What kind of sense organ? Like your tongue coming in contact with what kind of Vishaya? Like the ice cream. So when you're when your tongue and the ice cream have some yoga. Some yoga is contact. Due to the contact of your tongue with the ice cream, sukham. Due to the contact of your eyes with some pleasurable thing, sukha. Contact of your ears with something pleasant, sukha. Contact of your sense of touch or taste. This is Vishayendriya Samyoga. This sukham, this is the kind of happiness that arises due to our senses contacting pleasurable things. And this is Rajasa Sukha. For most people, this is like the only kind of sukha. This is conventional sukha. Conventional sukha is what you get from the ice cream or the pleasant, we'll generalize it, any pleasant experience. Any pleasant experience leads to this Rajasa Sukha. Now, you might be thinking, what's wrong with that? If I like ice cream, and if I don't eat too much, we'll have to add that part. If I like ice cream, and if I don't eat too much, what's wrong with that? If I like all kinds of things in life, all of them, so many things, thousands and thousands of different experiences I find pleasurable, and suppose I fill my day with all kinds of pleasurable experiences, and I just enjoy myself all day long with all these pleasurable experiences, that's Rajasa Sukha. What's wrong with that? It doesn't sound so bad. If I just fill my day from morning to night with all pleasurable experiences, well, Sri Krishna here says that tat agre, yatat agre, all those pleasurable experiences, tat agre, at the beginning, initially, all those pleasant experiences are amrita upamam. They're like nectar at first. Remember the prior verse? The prior verse said that sattvika sukha was tadagre vishamiva, that at the beginning, sattvika sukha was like poison, but it became like amrita. At first it was visha, then it became amrita. Guess what? Rajasa sukha is ulta, as you would say. It begins like amrita at the beginning, yatadagre, that which is at the beginning, amrita upamam, it is like nectar, but pariname, in time, as there is the transformation of that experience, pariname, later, vishamiva, it becomes like poison. It is pleasant at first and like poison later. The opposite of sattvika sukha, which was difficult at first and pleasant later. Here, rajasa sukha is pleasant at first, but like poison later. Now, that's a very strong statement. He's saying that when you eat ice cream, let's be very clear, when you eat ice cream, it's pleasant at first, but Sri Krishna says, in the long run, vishamiva, like poison. On what basis can you say it's like poison later? There are two reasons. And actually, The reasons aren't given in the verse, so that's why we have commentaries. So one reason is adharma janita narakadi hetu twat. One reason, according to Sri Shankara, is your pursuit of pleasure leads to what? Some pleasure, then I want more. So then you have more pleasure. Then what do you want? More. And then what do you want? More and more and more. When do you have enough? In fact, it's interesting that our demands get higher and higher and higher. At first, let me give my guru has a really nice example for this. He said, actually, let me just make something up. At first, you're satisfied with simple things. But in time, you're no longer satisfied with simple things. Actually, this is one metaphor he gave. So, remember the first car you bought? Was it a fancy car? Or was it a pretty basic car, right? For most of us, it was something pretty basic. But then, in fact, did your first, if it was quite a while ago, did your first car have air conditioning? Chances are it didn't. So how would you be okay with such a car today? Such a basic car with no air conditioning and no luxurious seats and all of this nice stuff that modern cars have. It's interesting, when you got that first car, you thought it was something great and wonderful. And if you were stuck with that same car today, you'd think, what a pile of junk. What's happened, of course, is your standards have gone up, your expectations have gone up. Things that used to make you happy no longer make you happy. Your needs, your necessities go on increasing. And Puja Swami Dayananda loves to tell this really nice observation he makes. We have this tendency that we start off with something that we consider to be a luxury, like the air conditioning in your first car. The first car you had air conditioning in, that was a luxury to have air conditioning in that car. Is it a luxury today? Today it's a necessity. So in my guru's words, we convert our luxuries into necessities. Now there's something very significant in that. If something is a luxury and you have it, it's wonderful. And if you don't have it, you don't think about it. Right? That's our definition of a luxury. If it's a necessity, if you have it, you don't think about it. And if you don't have it, it's a disaster. That's a necessity. As we go through life, we convert more and more luxuries into necessities. Necessities means our happiness and contentment becomes dependent on more and more and more. Where will that lead? Two possibilities. One is we'll come to the point where we can no longer afford better luxuries. And when we can no longer afford better, we've converted all of our luxuries into necessities, and we can't afford anything more, and we'll become frustrated. You look at your neighbors and see your neighbors have this and that and the other thing, and you can't afford this and that and the other thing. You become frustrated and cynical and unhappy. That's one possibility. The other possibility that Shankara mentions here is, you won't do this, but some people might, if you can't afford the luxuries, then you should find some way, by hook or crook, of getting those luxuries. Which means dharma gets set aside and you employ adharmic means of pursuing greater and greater sources of enjoyment. So that's one of the two major problems with rajasa sukha. So, what a metaphor. Do you know anything about addiction to substance addiction, like addiction, especially to illicit drugs? Let's take addiction to heroin. You're not experts. I'm also not an expert, but we understand a little bit. A heroin user will use a small amount of heroin and they'll get the desired effect. In time, they build up a tolerance to that heroin and they require a larger dose of heroin to get the same effect, not a greater effect. So to get the same effect they had with a small dose, after a year, they require twice the dose to get the same effect. And a year after that, they require four times the dose to get the same effect. This is a problem with addiction, and that is an addict will need more and more of the same substance to get the same effect. Do you think that's somewhat analogous to seeking pleasure and luxury in life? We want more and more and more and more. And there seems to be, there is no limit to that. Where will satiation ever be found? There's no satiation to be found. It's merely a matter of getting more and more and more. And at some point, following Dharma becomes an obstacle to getting more and more and more. And at that point, a person starts to behave in adharmic ways for the sake of fulfilling this craving, which is unsatiable. Do you think Rajasa Sukha is a problem? It's a huge problem. So this is one of Shankara's observation about why Rajasa Sukha is Taragre at the beginning, that Rajasa Sukha is Amritam Eva. It is like nectar at the beginning, but later, Visham Eva, it becomes like poison. So one reason is this insatiable craving for more and more and more and more, and what that leads to. There's a second problem. Again, Sri Krishna doesn't give you the details. In the commentary, we get some details. He says, Bala, Virya, Rupa, Prajna, Medha, Dhana, Utsaha, Hani, Hetu, Twat. The pursuit of pleasure leads to a kind of hani, harm, or loss. What kind of harm or loss? And he actually gives it in great detail. So bala, virya, a loss of strength, a loss of energy, a loss of enthusiasm. What Shankaracharya here is describing is someone, you know, the modern word for it is someone who is spoiled. Someone who has had an excess of pleasurable experiences in their life. Now, by the way, that doesn't only happen to children. Sometimes children get spoiled, but sometimes adults get spoiled, especially if they have access to too much money. They can get spoiled. What does it mean to be spoiled? A spoiled child or a spoiled adult will have all kinds of luxuries and still be unhappy. Right? Why are they unhappy? Because for two reasons. One, we just described, they want more. But the second reason, this is what Shankara is really talking about here, a kind of loss that takes place due to repeated enjoyment. Let's go back to the ice cream. You have your favorite ice cream. You enjoy that ice cream so much. Suppose you have that same ice cream 3 times a day continually. Your favorite ice cream, an ice cream that you're so fond of, or whatever food, whatever thing it is, suppose you enjoy that 3 times a day, day after day after day, after day after day after day, what happens? Eventually, you can't stand to look at it. You don't want to be near it. It becomes so disagreeable to you. This is a transformation that takes place inside of us. And that really is the other aspect of what Sri Krishna is talking about here. Amrita taragre. At the beginning, amrita upamam. It is like nectar. But pariname, in time, with a natural transformation that takes place. Parinama means transformation. Pariname, in time, with this natural transformation, what happens? Visham Eva. And before we move on, let me just make one final observation here. Suppose, we talked about Rajasa Sukha, suppose your whole life is spent pursuing Rajasa Sukha, which is conventional life, right? Everyone wants to enjoy themselves. So imagine you just enjoy this, you enjoy that, you enjoy as much as you can, enjoy a little of this, a little bit of that, a little bit of that. And still there's no lasting contentment, there's no sense of depth to that joy. They're all fleeting enjoyments. You enjoy that ice cream for how long? For the few minutes you're eating it. Suppose you live your whole life pursuing nothing but these fleeting enjoyments of Rajasa Sukha. Imagine coming to the end of your life, looking back on how you lived your life, thinking about all the things you've enjoyed, but how none of that led to deep contentment and peace. This is the ultimate loss. Shishankaracharya uses the word hani, loss. The ultimate loss is to waste away our lives in the pursuit of these trivial pleasures that come and go. That's the ultimate loss, is that Rajasa Sukha obstructs you from Sattvika Sukha, which is to say that Rajas, the presence of Rajas in your life, in your mind, in your thinking, in your behavior, is an obstacle to spiritual pursuit, because Rajas makes you focused on worldly pursuits, worldly accomplishments, worldly enjoyments. Not that those worldly enjoyments are wrong or bad, but if you are completely immersed in these worldly enjoyments, where is the room for spiritual growth? So that's the ultimate hani, the ultimate loss that Sri Shankaracharya describes here. So this is Tatsukam Rajasam Smritam. This is Rajasa Sukha, that which is Vishayendriya Samyoga, that which comes through contact of your senses with various objects of enjoyment. It is Yattaragre Mritopamam, at the beginning. It is like nectar, but Pariname, in time, with some transformation, it becomes Visham Eva, like poison. So, Sattvika Sukha is done. Rajasa Sukha is done. What's left? Right. Tamasa Sukha. Yadagre Chanu Bandhecha. Yadagre Chanu Bandhecha. Sukham Mohanam Atmanaha. Sukham Mohanam. Nidralasya Pramadottam. Nidralasya Pramadottam. Tattamasamudahritam, tattamasamudahritam. So, tattamasamudahritam, tat, that which is described in this verse, is tamasa sukha. It is, and this is given as a udahritam. This verse is given as an example to describe that which is tamasa sukha. What kind of sukha is that? It is yat agre, that which at the beginning, we saw that word in the last two verses, but not only at the beginning, cha, and also anubandhe. Anubandhe means that which is as a consequence. Kind of a fancy word, anubandhe, as a consequence. Consequences come after. So basically all it means is agre at the beginning and anubandhe later. Really, that's all it means. Literally, it means as a consequence, but consequences come later. So all it means is that which is at the beginning and at the end. Remember, for sukha, for the sattvika and rajasa, we saw that it was different at the beginning and different at the end. So for tamasa, he's saying it's the same at the beginning and it's the same at the end. What is the same? That sukha, that enjoyment, which is mohanam atmanaha. Atmanaha, for oneself, it is mohanam. It causes delusion. What do you mean? What kind of delusion does it cause? Nidra, sleep, alasya, laziness, pramada, I don't care, apathy. Pramada, I don't care, uttam, the kind of happiness, the kind of sukha, happiness, which is uttam, which is born, the kind of happiness which you get from nidra, everyone loves to sleep, the kind of happiness which is born of alasya, laziness, you have a nice comfortable chair in your home, you just like to, as they say in American English, kick back. Alasya and pramada. indifference. I don't care. Who cares? I'm just going to sit here and kick back. This is mohanamatmanaha, that which causes this kind of delusion, that which throws you off in that manner. This is tamasa sukha. Okay, let's get a little bit more specific. What kinds of things truly produce tamasa sukha? Well, honestly, sometimes people become too attached to sleeping. There are some people who are just so attached to sleeping, they just want to sleep and sleep, and they don't want to get up, they don't want to take care of their responsibilities. This is one kind of example. Not a great example. Here are some much more potent examples. The kind of happiness one gets from drinking alcohol or using illicit drugs. What kind of sukha is that? It's a sukha, and it is sukha. You can't deny that someone who uses drugs or alcohol, definitely they experience sukha. If they didn't experience sukha, they wouldn't use the drugs or alcohol. But notice, agre, at the beginning, anubandhe cha, and at the end, what is the consequence or result of that sukha found through drugs or alcohol? It's absolutely harmful. That's the hallmark of what is tamasa. Tamasa is what is harmful. So, other examples, gambling, right? Sukha for someone who likes to gamble. But what consequences? These are harmful ways. Sexual activity with many partners becomes another kind of sukha that is sought, which is absolutely harmful, not just to yourself, but then to others. These are kinds of sukha which are positively harmful. Now, you know, none of these examples are things that you're necessarily going to relate to, so I needed to find out an example you might relate to. So, and you might not like this example. That's okay. For some people, a source of tamasa sukha is watching the television. Honestly. Television sometimes is used almost like a drug. You want to numb your mind. If you watch television deliberately and carefully, if you choose the programs and you're not watching too much, there's nothing wrong with it. But some people use television as a means to numb the mind. You've had a really bad day at work, or you're fighting with your spouse, and you just want to, and your mind is so tense, your mind is so caught up with all of these problems, you just want to turn this one off, turn the mind off. How do you turn the mind off? By turning the TV on. And you use television as an escape to numb yourself to this internal pain and conflict. Honestly, that is a great example of tamasa sukha. It's harmful. You're using television like a drug. How can that possibly be good? If there's conflict in your mind, you should deal with that conflict, not numb yourself. Isn't that the basis for some addictive behavior? Someone who's miserable gets attracted to alcohol because drinking alcohol numbs the person to the conflict they have in their mind and in their life. Well, if you're using television to numb yourself to conflict, how is that different from abusing alcohol? Alcohol can be abused. Television, what a term, television abuse. We'll put that drug abuse, alcohol abuse, television abuse. Television abuse means what? To use television to escape from inner conflict. to use television to numb yourself. So this is an example then of tamasa, sukha. It's unhealthy and takes... This is, in my introduction, we talked about the basic understanding of sattva, rajas, tamas. We can put it like this. That which is sattvika leads to spiritual growth. That which is, this very general observations now. And general observation because we are coming to the end of this topic. There's one more verse we'll just sneak in here at the end. But here's the observation. As we come to the end of this topic of sattva, rajas, and tamas, sattvika is that which conduces to spiritual growth. Rajasa is that which conduces to worldly enjoyment. And tamasa is that which leads to just loss. Loss not just of spiritual growth, but even loss of worldly enjoyment, which is why we've used these words before in several prior classes. One for whom sattva guna is predominant, who is on a path of spiritual growth, such a person is called a yogi. Right? The one for whom sattva guna is predominant, they're on a spiritual path, they are a yogi. One for whom rajoguna is predominant, for them, worldly enjoyment is the most important thing. That person is called a bhogi. So the yogi has sattva guna. The bhogi has rajoguna. And the one who is dominated by tamas, who's failed both at spiritual growth and even failed to gain worldly pleasure, they just stay in bed and suffer. Such a person is called a rogi. Yogi, bhogi, rogi, sattva, rajas, tamas. Tremendous consequences. Now, to wrap up the subject matter. Natad hasti prativyam va, natad hasti prativyam, devi deve shuva punaha, devi deve shuva. Sattvam prakriti jar muktam, sattvam prakriti jar. Yadebhisyatribhirgunaihi. Natad, actually take the second half first. Actually we can't. Natadasti, there is nothing. Natarasti, prithivyam, here on this earth, or divi, deveshu vapunaha, or divi in the heavens, deveshu, among the gods, here on earth, or in heaven amongst the gods, natarasti, there is nothing, we have to jump around now in the third line, there is nothing which is muktam, there is no sattvam, no existent thing, which is muktam, free from what? Ebihi, tribihi, gunaihi, ebihi, these, tribihi, these three, gunaihi, these three gunas, sattva, rajas, tamas, these three gunas, which are prakriti, jaihi, born of prakriti, born of nature. These are the essence of prakriti, essence of nature is sattva, rajas, tamas. So there is nothing here on this earth or nothing in heaven which is unaffected by these three gunas, mukta, free from. There is no sattvam, no existent thing which is muktam without these three gunas. Meaning, these three gunas are fundamental to all existence. We have spent many weeks discussing the manifestation of these three gunas in our human behavior. I've got that up on the board. You can turn on the light, please. So here we go. This has been our discussion for the last several months. Maybe not that long, at least for many weeks. Back in chapter 17, we talked about Shraddha, We talked about Sattvika, Rajasa, and Tamasa, Shraddha. Do you remember that? Then we talked of Shraddha meaning faith. Then we talked about Ahara, food. Remember? We talked about Sattvika food, Rajasa food, Tamasa food. Then we talked about Yajna, different attitudes towards worship. Sattvika, Rajasa, Tamasa. Then we talked about different kinds of tapas. Sattvika, Rajasa, Tamasa. And finally, different kinds of dana. Sattvika, Rajasa. And that was pretty much that was 90% of the content of chapter 17. Was this threefold analysis, excuse me, of those things which are on the board. Excuse me. Then, in chapter 18, we started with then tyaga and a threefold analysis of tyaga, renunciation, in terms of sattva, rajas, tamas. Then jnana, karma, and karta, jnanam, knowledge here of Ishvara, karma and karta, the karta, the doer of action, and karma, what is done. We analyzed that in terms of sattva, rajas, and tamas. And then in the last class, buddhi, knowledge, and dhriti, courage, fortitude, intent, all of that. And then what subject matter did we just conclude? Sukha, this threefold sukha. Look how much attention Sri Krishna gives to this topic. Doesn't that suggest it's pretty important? And why is it important? It's talking about our lives. If your life is dominated by tamas, what are the consequences? If your life is dominated by rajas, what are the consequences? If your life is dominated by sattva, what are the consequences? So the intent of Sri Krishna through all of these teachings for a chapter and the beginning of chapter 18, his intent is that we should all be highly alert as to what's going on inside of us. Is every behavior and every thought is going to be molded by sattva, rajas, tamas, or some combination thereof? And we've had this discussion before, we'll just wrap it up now. By becoming increasingly alert to our behavior and our thinking, and by analyzing our behavior and thinking in terms of these three gunas, we can guide our lives, guide our behavior, guide our thinking away from tamas, away from rajas, and towards sattva guna. We guide ourselves, we lead ourselves through a process of self-observation. By observing ourselves, looking at what is sattvika, what is rajasa, what is tamasa, we continually refine our behavior and thinking, we refine ourselves. That's what a life of spiritual growth is about. That is what this whole long section is about. And as we come to an end of the section, we can end with a... first of all, what do we have? We have two things. First is a homework assignment. Homework assignment, as it's been for the last couple of classes, is to continue to observe your behavior and thinking in terms of sattva, rajas, tamas. And to observe non-judgmentally, non-critically. We're trying to learn and do better. This self-observation is not for the sake of putting ourselves down. We discussed that at length before. I won't go further. That's the homework assignment. And then the second thing is our sankalpa. Our sankalpa for the coming week, our sankalpa for our arati today, is that we continue to minimize the tamas and rajas that's present in our thinking and our behavior, and we continue to cultivate that which is sattvika. That's our sankalpa. All right. I have a couple of important announcements to make here, so please relax for a few minutes. Of course, we have our program for teens tomorrow at 11. Tomorrow we have a special program also. It's the yearly Mindful Awareness Meditation Half-Day Retreat. And that half-day retreat will be tomorrow from 2 p.m. to 6 p.m. It's meant for experienced meditators. It's not an introductory retreat, but if you've been practicing mindful awareness techniques, you can. There's a sign-up sheet over on the counter. You can sign up and attend the retreat. If you're signed up, be sure to check your email before coming. There'll be some important email announcement before you come, so just check your email beforehand. Then after the retreat at 6:15, I'll conduct a satsang question-answer session. You can stay back for that. I'll mention that, a new announcement, and that is we're getting ready for our 15th anniversary. Can you imagine? 15 years already. I can't imagine. Anyway, along with the anniversary celebration, you can mark your calendar as June 6th. It's a Saturday, so the Saturday of June 6th. First Saturday of June will be our anniversary celebration. Along with that anniversary, we're bringing out another souvenir edition, as we have in past years. And the reason I'm bringing this to your attention is we'd invite you to participate in this souvenir project, as you have before, by placing an ad in the souvenir or by sponsoring a page. It's a way of raising funds to both pay for the souvenir and pay for the celebration. So if you can please participate in the souvenir. There's flyers. We need to get some flyers out. Oh, they're up there on the board, I think. So they're someplace over there. I'm pretty sure you'll find flyers for the souvenir. They'll give the information on what you need to do to place an ad or sponsor a page. Several people have asked about why we are starting to enforce the rule about no food and drinks in this hall. It's always been a rule, but we haven't enforced it very strictly, and now we're enforcing it even with regard to water, and there's a specific reason for that. I mentioned this in the meditation session, so forgive me if you're hearing it a second time, but it's important to know that if this were just a lecture hall, there wouldn't be an issue at all. Bring the water, etc. But it's not just a lecture hall, right? This is also a place of worship. We have a temple. We perform worship at this temple every time we meet here. So because we have a temple here, we have to change the rules in what is appropriate to a temple. Would you bring a bottle of water into a temple and sip that water in front of the altar? You wouldn't do that. Well, because we have the temple here, the altar here, we shouldn't be bringing water into the hall. There is a water fountain out in the lobby. Please feel free. No one will object. If you need some water, please excuse yourself. Go get the water. So please be understanding. This is why we have, why we're calling attention to this rule. It's a matter of maintaining the kind of respect and reverence that an altar deserves. Okay. Also, we have another volunteer project today. We're getting ready for some parking lot improvements. You'll see that in the coming weeks. And as part of that, we chopped down a bunch of trees. We have more chopped up trees that need to be removed. Many of you stayed back several weeks ago to help with that. We've got another batch of trees. They've already been chopped down, but we need to remove them. And we also have some other debris we can pick up. If a bunch of you could stay back, we could use as many as 20 volunteers again. It's a beautiful day, so you can go out there and clean up some trees together. They have a nice lunch ready for you. So it should be about 45 minutes to an hour of moving trees, and then we'll have a nice lunch. We could really use a lot of you, about 20 people. So if you can stay back and help with that project in the parking lot, we'd be very, very grateful. The library will be open after class, and we'll end with our prayers.